Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for May's Exotics Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, lecturer at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies based at the University of Edinburgh, Emma Keeble. Thank you, Emma. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you so much. It's great to be doing another webinar with you. Today's webinar is going to be looking at a subject that I particularly have an interest in, and that's assessment of chronic skeletal pain in our pet rabbits, how we go about sort of diagnosing this, and also what our management options are. And I think this is a massive area that is very much overlooked in pet rabbit medicine. And certainly, I guess, in the last sort of 5 years have become more and more aware, with our rabbits living a lot longer, of these sort of potential issues, which often, very often, go unmissed both by their owners and by us as vets. So what I hope by the end of this webinar is, having shown you quite a few videos throughout it, that you'll be able to look at your bunnies that you see in practice and notice these very subtle changes that are associated with skeletal pain, and start making this a part of your routine clinical exam. So we have our usual issues with rabbits. You know, they don't show signs of pain very easily, and it makes it incredibly challenging. And because of this, we really do struggle at times. We also have very little information that's really properly researched about how effective our analgesic drugs are in pet rabbits, and also how safe and how long we can use them for. So there are real obstacles to overcome, but things have advanced really quite dramatically, I would say, in the last 5 years, and we are more aware of what we can use. I think another big problem, owners often don't realise, even the really diligent owners, that their rabbits are in pain. And I've got a few case scenarios to sort of discuss with you and show you. You know, quite often, even with very, very reliable and hands-on owners, it can be difficult. And I think we as vets probably underutilize our analgesia in these animals, because we think, oh, they're fine, they're coping, when actually probably they are in considerable pain. I think we're sometimes worried as vets as well about what we can use, what we can perhaps combine to sort of use multimodal analgesia, you know, how often we need to give it, what the dose rates are. And quite often owners will sort of say, really, it didn't seem to make much difference. So that can be problematic as well. You know, how do we assess whether this is making an effect or not? I think the bottom line for owners is, you know what's normal for your pet. And if an owner's coming to you with a concern saying, I'm not quite happy here, we need to be listening as vets to those concerns and acting on them. And I never dismiss an owner for whatever small reason who's come in with their animal. You know, listen, and there usually is something going on that they've picked up on. I mean, obviously with severe pain, the animal may not be moving and there may be other signs, but with sort of chronic skeletal pain, the signs can be very subtle. And they don't tend to react like dogs or cats, you know, particularly on clinical exam. The sort of things that an owner might notice would be sort of changes in behavior, perhaps sort of a more reluctance to move, perhaps first thing in the morning. The animal might change in its behavior and become more aggressive. It might sleep a lot more. And these sometimes in our older rabbits can just be signs that owner thinks, oh, it's just getting a little bit old. And that's why. So again, listen to the owner. And if these signs are going on, we need to be looking at whether this animal's got osteoarthritis or perhaps spinal lesions. Obviously, we all know that they can be very hunched in their posture as well, but this can be difficult because what's normal for rabbits, sometimes rabbits do sit in a fairly hunched posture. A rabbit that's very relaxed may lie out, and this could be normal. This might not be an animal that's got back pain. So listening to owners and knowing what's normal for that individual is really, really important. Hopefully we're all aware of the really sort of obvious signs of pain. So tooth grinding in particular can be a real concern that animal is in discomfort. But what's interesting is, you know, rabbits can actually tooth grind normally in an almost contented way as a sort of quieter noise that they make, and it can be quite infrequent. So trying to distinguish between those two types of teeth grinding, again, that's a question we need to be asking our owners. Is this something that they normally do, or is this an unusual behavior, and is it persistent? Obviously, if they're in acute pain, then we may actually hear vocalization. But sometimes pain and anxiety are often combined, and knowing whether an animal's just more anxious, if it's a stressy individual and it's in a new environment or an unfamiliar surroundings, then is it just anxiety or is this truly pain? There are obviously more specific signs of pain. So if you have an acutely painful area, we might see the animal over-grooming. We might also see altered postures, and this is something that I see a lot of, probably daily in practice. One of my things is that I get the rabbits to walk around our consulting room floor, which is quite slippy actually, so it's not the ideal environment, but often on that slippy floor, these sort of altered postures and gaits are more evident. And so that's a really good way to assess your pet rabbits. So explain that to owners. Usually give them an area of towel where they can start off on. But as the rabbit gets confidence and starts moving more freely around your consulting room floor, you will see changes in their gait if there are problems. And we talked about immobility, teeth grinding and stretching out with severe pain. So I wanted to show you the first video that we've got here, and this is what I was talking about getting an animal out and letting it walk. Now, this animal's managing to move very well, but you can easily see that this is a really abnormal gait. It's stopped there, it's found it a bit too difficult, it's going to pause for quite a while, it's very hunched in its posture, and it's not properly hopping on its back hind limbs. It's really sort of almost doing a crawling type stance. I'll play the first bit again because you can really see this. So there the animal's actually crawling. And this is very, very abnormal. So we're thinking that there could be a problem with the back, with the spine, or there could be severe osteoarthritis in the hind limbs. We often do see it in the forelimbs as well. Owner hadn't noticed actually that this rabbit was abnormal. So this is quite a common occurrence. Talking about other things, we sort of, you know, the signs are subtle in rabbits, so we can get these very obvious signs, but I think owners often pick up also on the more subtle things, such as a reduced food intake, which can also then be associated with weight loss. We might find changes in our behavior, perhaps at different times of the day. We might also see changes in gait or locomotion. If an animal is a bonded pair, there might be changes in their interactions between the two rabbits, and this can be more aggressive, or it could be that another animal becomes more dominant. With very severe pain, you might see actual signs of a sort of starry coat, eyes being more closed, ears back, watery eyes. And obviously all of these can then lead to secondary issues. So if you've got a rabbit coming in with gut stasis, you start thinking, is there an underlying cause of pain that's causing these repeated episodes? Things that we can do as vets, we can actually record, you know, we like taking measurements, we can actually record the physiological changes. You know, is this rabbit really got an elevated heart rate or respiratory rate? What's happening with its temperature? Has it lost weight as well? But often those are associated with more acute painful episodes. Chronic pain, you tend not to see these really obvious responses. Things that we can look at from a distance, if we've got the animal coming into us, we can look at it in the box first, which is something I always do at every consult. Have a quick look in, look at the rate and character of the respiratory pattern. Often get our students actually to take a quick respiratory rate. And what's the general sort of body condition of this animal? Is it really lean? Is there a worry that, you know, there's some chronic disease process ongoing? If you start looking into pain in rabbits, there have been some really nice studies done, and certainly looking at trying to grade the level of pain in rabbits. And we have this thing called the Rabbit Grimace Scale that hopefully you're aware of. I've got a web reference there for you, and you can download this and have a look at the, they've got lots of different postural changes that you can look at to assess sort of acute and perhaps more visceral pain in pet rabbits. But I do think this is something that can be extrapolated to the more chronic pain as well. If this rabbit is sitting there with its ears up and looking bright and alert, then obviously that's a really good sign. But the other things we can look at, certainly nostril flare is supposed to be quite a good way to tell whether an animal's really in pain or not. The more flared the nostril, the more likely it is to be experiencing pain. And this is the chart that you can download, and we have these up in our consulting room so that owners can have a look at them and find them hopefully useful. As I said though before, with sort of chronic painful episodes, the signs can be more subtle and they can be very, very difficult. So what we really need to be doing is getting a really good history from our owner. And if this is something you haven't got time for in your normal consultation allocation time, then maybe get owners to fill out a questionnaire beforehand in the waiting room, and you can have a look at that perhaps later. So do listen to the owner. And looking at this picture, I showed this recently at the Rabbit Welfare Conference. This is my own pet rabbit, and I asked the vets there whether they thought that this rabbit had a fractured spine, and half of the vets put their hands up saying yes. This is actually, you know, a very relaxed, happy rabbit who's lying out. And then there he is sitting up again. So it's a normal behavior for this animal. It does actually give my cleaner a shock every time she walks past the door, because she thinks the rabbit's died because it's lying happily on its side. So, but being aware that that's normal is a really good thing. What we're more interested in vets is what's abnormal. So this is the part I really wanted to sort of talk to you about in terms of our diagnosis of these sort of chronic degenerative joint conditions that we see, also of vertebral spondylosis of the spine and intervertebral disc disease, which I think we are diagnosing more and more commonly, particularly in our older rabbits, obviously, but we see it very, very early in the giant breeds, and it's such a problem with these guys. So really, actually, from sort of 3-4 years onwards in the giant breeds, you will certainly see signs of degenerative joint disease. It has also been diagnosed in animals really of a very, very young age. And we did a little sort of pilot study at Edinburgh University where we looked at our radiographs over a 2-year period. And basically we found a sort of quite high incidence of degenerative joint disease in our pet rabbits. So over 50% were affected. I think the thing that we wanted to do was to sort of try and find out how prevalent this condition is, but also to try and actually grade the severity of the osteoarthritis, because more and more we're seeing pretty severe cases, and also look at what joints in particular we really want to be concentrating on, and therefore, you know, what do we need to be radiographing when we're looking for this disease process. Of all the animals we looked at, pretty much every animal, well, 64% had at least one joint affected, but there were several that had several joints, and the most common thing, area affected really was the stifle. And that's something that, you know, again, is really, really commonly something we find. So radiograph your stifle joints, I think, is probably the take-home message. We are very, very lucky at the university. We have obviously have radiography, but we also do have the more advanced imaging techniques, and these are really excellent, actually, for particularly bone lesions. So CT in particular, we really rely on, actually. We're actually able to do CT conscious, and I'll talk about that in a short while. So we've got our animal in the consultation room, and we're wanting to observe it from a distance. I've got 3 videos that I want to show you of different cases, just really to highlight how subtle these clinical signs can be. So the first video here I'll talk through. This is a lop rabbit that came in for a routine checkup, and there's his little friend coming out. Just shows you the different characters. So the big one was out straight away. The little friend took a little bit longer. There's actually a third one that never came out because he was a bit scaredier. But we're looking mainly at the grey lop. And as he's hopping, I'm slightly concerned, but he isn't taking really obvious hops, obvious bounces, and we've stopped, we're pivoting there, and we're sort of turning on our back end. There's a little guy, the third one did come out in the end. Whereas if you compare to the friend who's quite happily taking hops, this is very, very subtle, but this animal did have degenerative joint disease. We'll play some more that are a little bit more obvious, so hopefully you can pick up on these. So I've got another video here just to show you. So again, quite a large rabbit. This animal's actually crawling. So if you look at the back legs as it's walking, it's not happy. Now, a lot of owners will turn around and say, oh, that's because he's on an unusual floor. But as you saw with the other rabbits in the first video, the smaller one that was very healthy was hopping happily. This rabbit, I would be worried that there are problems, and I'd be saying to the owner, if they're not convinced, perhaps we video it at home and just see what's going on. Now he tries to jump back into the box and it goes everywhere. It's quite funny. But this hopefully you would pick up, this sort of crawling type behavior, reluctance to do a proper hop, and then this pivoting when they're going to play it one more time for you, when they're trying to sort of explore. So there we go, two little steps, not a proper hop, then we're stopping because we're not quite happy, we're feeling insecure, tried to hop there but one of the legs took a while to go back under. Here we're really pivoting round on our back end, we're not actually hopping round, which a normal rabbit would do. We're pivoting again back because we're really not happy with this, and then we're trying to hop. But again, the hops that we're, and again, a little crawl, the hops that we're taking are not really, really lovely, big bouncing hops that you would hope to see. So the last video, these are two giant breed rabbits, I think. Yes, here we are. So the white giant breed rabbit here came in because it had a problem and an owner was worried, and you can see how little the white one is really wanting to move. When it does, it's pivoting and it's kind of doing little shuffles and it's not really wanting to move around. We've got actually tails down here for it. So this is taking quite a while for us to see any normal sort of behavior. Whereas its friend on the right is seemingly doing better hops, less pivoting, and sort of, you know, happy to pick up on the back end. So very subtle, really, not in the white one. The white one's fairly obvious that we've got problems, but in the brown rabbit, there were some subtle little things that I was worried about. And also, given the fact it's a giant breed rabbit, we did decide to do a CT on that animal as well as the white one. So I'll come on to talk about that in just a second. We are lucky, as I mentioned, we do have access to CT imaging on site, and we have started to do all our pet rabbits conscious. This is something that we will be reporting. We've got a paper in press about this because it really makes it so much easier for us. We're not having to anaesthetize the animal, and owners are much happier really to go for this, especially if we've got a very sort of debilitated animal or an animal with ileus. We do always place an IV catheter so that we can get contrast studies as well, and we'll do high resolution contrast studies of the area that we're particularly concerned about. If an animal's dyspneic at all, we can use oxygen as well. The picture that you see there is an animal that's anaesthetized, but what we have is a small plastic circular container called a mouse trap, and we put the rabbit inside that. It's got oxygen via a tube that can be infused into the chamber, and we usually put a towel under the rabbit and then just roll up a towel on either side to make a small sandwich so the rabbit sits still, and quite often we'll put just a gentle towel on top. The box is then closed, and we have a couple of velcroed straps that go over it, and the rabbit just sits happily, and then we can put them into the CT. We have also got microphones in there so we can hear whether they're moving or not, so we can choose to run the CT when the animal's still, and that's really, really helpful as well. I've got some CT images that I want to talk you through. These are both of fairly severe cases, both in giant breed rabbits. The one on the left here that I'm going to show you with the arrow, this is actually the white rabbit that we were seeing earlier. And the left stifle in particular has got, you can see all the little osteophytes around it and the irregularity of the joint surface there. So it had osteoarthritis actually in both stifles pretty severely. But this is also another giant breed rabbit that was really struggling moving around, and we've got quite severe bony reaction around the stifle joint as well in that picture. So these are just individual still pictures that I've shown you, but I've got some videos as well just to go through. So we'll get this one up and running. Let's play that. It goes quite fast, but this is showing you both stifles. If you look particular, I'll play it again in just a second. But what we're looking at, obviously, is the stifle area on each side. You can actually see still here so much reaction around that one as well. So if you just watch as we go through, quite considerably severe arthritic disease in this animal. So this was the white rabbit that I was showing you, and it was really finding it very, very hard hopping around. And that obviously made us concerned, so we did the CT. So I have another video to show you, again, just really to demonstrate that we've got some pretty severe changes. I think this is a stifle as well. I'll play it again in just a second because it's giving you a chance to sort of orientate yourself. So we're looking in this area here and on the other side in this area here. What you'll also see is that we've got some sludge in the bladder, and that will appear as I play it again. So if you have another look. So there we've got some arthritic change. We've got the sludge in the bladder appearing, and then on the left stifle we've also got some irregularities and changes around that stifle joint. I'm going to play it a third time because it goes so fast. But really nice to do this sort of 3D modeling and be able to actually see how severe these changes really are. And it's actually quite shocking when you get your CT report back how severe things have become. So I wanted to share with you the white rabbit CT report. We had this sort of splayed hind limb on the left, in particular the shuffling hind limb gait. We'd actually clinically assessed and found some muscle wastage as well, and the rabbit was very reluctant to jump. And when we got this report back, obviously there's very, very severe changes there. Something we also see, and I'm going to touch on this, is this lumbar spondylosis, which is, you know, how significant is that? And we've got this in the final diagnosis here. I do think this is more significant than perhaps we give it credit for. You know, if you've got extensive bony formation bridging your vertebrae, it's got to be affecting how mobile that spine is and how well the animal moves. And whether that's painful or not, I don't know, but those sorts of changes could then lead to problems with posturing when you're urinating, and secondary urine staining, urine scald, and perhaps urinary tract infections as well. So always amazes me how severe the CT reports are when we get them back. This is just showing you a CT image, a longitudinal section, just to sort of show you. You would get this certainly picking this up radiographically. This is the vertebral spondylosis that we see. There's a wee bit starting there as well. And this is such a common thing in pet rabbits as they get older. And we're picking this up on CT, but you would certainly be able to radiograph this animal and see those changes quite well with radiography. You might have to anaesthetize your animal though to do that, and that's why we're really lucky with our conscious CTs. We don't have to do that. I suppose sedation would be possible, just, you know, a mild sedation to get the rabbit into lateral. I wanted to also share with you, so when those two giant breed rabbits came in, the white one and the brown one, we decided, because there were some very subtle sort of changes, and also because of the breed and age of the animal, I think it was about four and a half years old, that we would also do a CT on that individual. And it was just very, very mild, occasionally crawling in the consult room rather than hopping is what we put as the given history. Other than that, owner hadn't actually noticed anything, was very happy with the animal, and certainly actually was sort of contesting in the consult room whether this was normal behaviour for that individual. But when we actually came to look at the CT findings, we've got pretty significant remodeling and osteophytosis, both of the elbows and stifles. We've also got lumbar spondylosis, which is relatively moderate. And interestingly, we've just picked up there's a small renal infarct as well. And, you know, obviously we don't know what the significance of that is, but that's really interesting to note. So this animal was really hardly showing any clinical signs, but because of the breed and the age, you know, we're straight away thinking it's almost certainly got osteoarthritis and issues. And, you know, you could almost argue, should we just start this animal on some analgesia? But now that the owner knows that there are these issues, you know, they can keep a closer eye, they can monitor for signs, and it's really, really helpful for them to know this. This was a case where we had a rabbit that had postural difficulties when it was urinating, and it had urine staining of the back end, and this was repeatedly happening. It had been also treated for urinary tract infections on multiple occasions. It had a mild presumed congenital kyphosis of the spine as well. But when I palpated gently along the spine from the back of the skull all the way down, it seemed to be quite uncomfortable in the neck area. So we decided we'd go for a CT examination just to see really, you know, whether this posturing difficulty was related to a spinal problem. And what this showed quite markedly, I'll just use the pointer, hopefully you've picked up on this anyhow, we've got the vertebrae here, and you can see that there's that real impingement there of the spine where it's very, very abnormal. And this is actually an intervertebral prolapsed disc, so intervertebral disc disease. And this animal was then put onto cage rest and analgesia, and certainly has markedly improved over the past sort of 4 to 6 weeks. So again, you know, subtle signs, other problems that it presented for, but actually there was a real underlying problem associated with a prolapsed disc that certainly wasn't causing such impingement that it was causing neurological signs, but it was causing pain, and it was then, you know, causing difficulty in posturing to urinate. So I guess the questions are, what are we going to do about this? So, you know, we've diagnosed it, or we've looked at suspicious clinical signs, we've then diagnosed it. What do we say to the owners? What's the advice going home? I mean, I guess hopefully you're all dealing with dog and cat osteoarthritis in practice, and really we can extrapolate from the experiences of vets in dogs and cats. And I do think husbandry changes are really, really important. If we've got neck pain in particular, we might well want to raise the bowls. Now, interesting, I couldn't really find a picture of a rabbit with raised food bowls, and except this one off the internet. And what we're seeing here is not ideal, because the rabbit's got this really high side of it to jump over, and it's also got a very high It's got a very high litter tray side as well, so it's not ideal. But if we didn't have that box bit at the back and we just had the raised food bowls, this might be a lot easier for an animal, particularly with vertebral spondylosis, perhaps involving the cervical area or intervertebral disc disease, to eat from. We also very rarely commonly get animals really struggling to get into their litter trays. If they've got severe degenerative joint disease of the stifles, it's really common that this presents as perhaps abnormal urination around the house, or urine staining because they can't lift themselves up off the back legs well. So having a think about the litter tray, lowering the size, making it more accessible to that animal is really, really key. Most pet owners of rabbits are quite clued up on providing non-slip fouring, but it's worth reiterating to owners, you know, these animals are finding it very difficult on the slippy flooring to maintain a good purchase, and we really need to encourage them to be moving, but perhaps on carpets or on mats, or you know, making sure that we have proper purchase on the flooring. Another thing that I really recommend is taking away any stairs or ramps. And actually, it's interesting, more and more when you quiz owners, they're saying, my rabbit doesn't like coming up or down stairs anymore. Now, you know, that's a telltale sign. So getting rid of any two-tiered hutch situations is really important. Getting rid of ramps, getting rid of stairs. Thinking about also the outside area, because you might get that all sorted indoors, but if this rabbit's getting daily access outside, what is the situation outside? Is it on concrete, which is not ideal? Is it on a softer bedding? And what's the situation with trying to jump over things? If we've really got obvious disc disease, then we might want to consider restricting exercise. You know, and obviously this can be rabbit led as well. But if we're worried about a disc, then we probably would restrict exercise for sort of 4 to 6 weeks. As a rule of thumb, though, I generally say, look, you know, let the animal lead you. And if it's able to, you know, seemingly navigate obstacles and jump over things, then maybe a little bit of normal exercise is actually really good for it. We'll come on to pain relief as well. I've got a whole load of slides just to discuss with you about that. I was talking about dog and cats and thinking about how we manage them. Certainly obese rabbits, if they've got osteoarthritis, we do need to be thinking about weight management and getting them onto a diet that's going to gradually allow for weight loss. And I usually say no more than 5% weight loss per month. We've got to be really careful in these guys that they don't go into hepatic lipidosis, because they usually are very, very overweight. There are commercial diets available for weight loss. So the pelleted diets, there are companies who are making weight reduction diets. So we could potentially advise owners that they would use these. Also thinking potentially about sort of complementary therapies, so physiotherapy, acupuncture, these are becoming more and more popular, really, I feel, with our clients. And I do think they have a place. Certainly the physio that I've seen done, when it's done well, can really make a big difference in these cases. We do need to be making sure that they're going to someone who has experience, and that we liaise as vets with those people so that they know what the specific issues are. And usually I'll be writing a referral letter and passing on the CT imaging results so that they can work with those. And then we've got this whole big area of nutraceuticals and nutritional supplements, and do they work, do they not work? Interestingly, there has been some work done in guinea pigs looking at glycosaminoglycans and supplementation in osteoarthritis models, because guinea pigs are often used in laboratory animal research as animal models for human arthritis. And certainly there seems to be really encouraging evidence that they can be helpful in preventing the sort of development or advancement of osteoarthritis. So thinking about those sorts of nutraceuticals may also be beneficial. So I've got some images just to show you with the physiotherapy that's been going on. We, until very recently, haven't had a physiotherapy presence at Edinburgh University, so our colleagues at the University of Glasgow have been helping, but we do now have, we're very lucky, we do have a new physiotherapy team who are fantastic, and we're able to refer cases more and more to them. So these photos are taken at Glasgow, so just to acknowledge that, and also my lovely owner for supplying them, because they're really super. So the next one is actually a video of the same rabbit that was undergoing the physiotherapy, just to show you aquatherapy. I really like this video. I'm trying to decide whether the rabbit's totally chilled or totally terrified, but it does look very, very chilled as it floats there. So these are sort of to try and encourage obviously normal sort of movement in an area that where they're sort of more buoyant and not non-weight bearing, so hopefully less painful. There is a much better one. Let's show the next video, which is actually again sort of using the water hydrotherapy and a treadmill to get that animal to start pushing with its back legs and to build up the musculature at the back end as well, because quite often they've got muscle wastage. So I think that animal's tolerating that very, very well and seems relatively happy to be walking along on the treadmill. Obviously, this needs to be done with time, dependent on the individual's response. And I think, you know, this animal had been for repeated physiotherapy and was getting quite used to the technique and how it worked. So, again, it's something to build up with local physiotherapy teams and get a good relationship going so that we can then refer our cases on to them. So, having talked about these sort of things we can do to sort of advise general husbandry changes, what can we do as vets to help with pain relief? And this is a massive area, as I mentioned at the beginning, that there are a lot of unknowns. But we do know that analgesia really will help. And if we've got those sort of severe changes that we're seeing, even if owners feel like, oh, it's not really making much difference, I feel happier as a vet that we are providing analgesia. And it may be it's not going to make that much difference to the animal's gait because there's so many changes around that joint that we've actually got a sort of functional problem with the joint. So we're still going to have the lameness, but the pain may be reduced if we're providing analgesia. And, you know, we may well then see the animal putting on a bit of weight. We may see an animal having normal behavior. And one thing I do find owners saying is that, you know, oh, it feels like the rabbit's got a new lease of life. It's back to how it was before. It's binkying. It's happy. It's jumping around. And we do hear this time and time again with our arthritis cases once they go on to a good analgesic regime. So we all know what the negative effects of pain are and how they can really affect an individual. And I think it's important to consider these again, in particular thinking about the ileus cases that are coming in. You know, why are those animals repeatedly getting GI stasis? We obviously want to rule out dental issues, but is it actually chronic skeletal pain that's causing that problem? And then we have the problem is what do we use? You know, how are we going to give it? Is it going to be injectable, oral, topical, transdermal, or a CRI? How compliant is the owner? How are they able to manage at home? And how long are we going to give this for? And that really is on a case-by-case basis and with a discussion with the owner as to how they can fit this into their daily routine. Obviously, we need to think about our type of pain, and in these cases, it tends to be chronic, horrible chronic pain, and somatic. So we need to be thinking about how our analgesics work and what is the best way forwards and what the best combination perhaps to give, and always explain to owners about preemptive analgesia as well. I think that's something they don't often get, you know, that we don't want to wait till our animal's in pain, not eating, losing weight. We want to get in there quickly and get it sorted. So I just started thinking about all the different types of analgesia that we have. And I think sometimes we're a bit naughty and we just reach for our non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. Often meloxicam is the first one that we would go for. But we do have other things available. The problem with meloxicam, it's really actually very good for arthritic cases and arthritic pain, good for chronic inflammatory pain. So it is something we tend to go for, but we do need to make sure, particularly as this is often in older animals, that our animal has normal renal function before we are giving these. And also we need to think about the gastrointestinal effects as well. I would always be wanting really to run sort of biochemistry and check urea creatinine before I start meloxicam. What we've also found with rabbits is quite often these are normal because, as we know, we have to have at least 75% of the kidney damaged before we get changes. What might be more practical for the owner and perhaps more sensitive is to do a urine protein creatinine ratio. And if this is elevated, that would give me concern that the animal was potentially had renal issues. If we're doing CTs, we're very lucky. We can obviously look at the renal architecture, size. If we're using contrast as well, we can look at renal excretion of dye, and that can be very helpful to see. If we're really concerned, then probably ultrasound scan is the way forwards to assess the kidneys and the normal architecture with that. But yeah, just be aware. The other thing is, do we then also consider with the GI effects giving concurrent ranitidine or antacids with meloxicam? quite often we are giving them just because we've got an animal perhaps that's inappetent and going into gut stasis, but should we perhaps be giving these longer term, and is this something we need to think about? So meloxicam is often the one that people reach for, and as I said, we need to just be happy that in an older rabbit we don't have other issues that would contradict to having this this drug as an analgesic. It does appear to be safe in rabbits, although there aren't really any long-term studies. And it is quite palatable. Rabbits seem to really, really like it. My worry is how long it actually lasts for in pet rabbits, and we don't really know. We do tend to give quite a high dose twice daily. So we're using 0.3 to 0.6 mg per kg of meloxicam per os twice a day. And I quite often tend to start with a 0.6 mg per kg and get owners to tape it down, let them know that we can bring it down. Other drugs that we can use, and we certainly could use opiate drugs concurrently with the non-steroidals, which would potentially create quite a nice analgesia. Obviously, there are the ones if you've got an animal in and you are able to medicate it when it's in hospital, then we've got quite a range of different opiates that we can be using and that work well. We certainly, for severe pain, would use, you know, intravenous morphine or methadone in our pet bunnies. If we're less concerned, then perhaps onto buprenorphine. And we use quite a low dose. You can go up to 0.05 mg per kg of buprenorphine in rabbits. The reason we go a little bit low is we've got a lot of students injecting. We've had the odd situation where someone's injected a rabbit and then not written it down or ticked it, and then we've got another injection being given. So even with that, we're still relatively within our therapeutic dose range, so we do go a little bit lower than perhaps you could in practice. Other morphine-related drugs, just talking about their effects and how they work and whether they are full agonists or partial agonists. We tend to give a lot of these by injection, but there are some studies looking at transmucosal administration of buprenorphine and also thinking about transdermal patches as well. And this is something we do need to investigate more, really. There are very, very few studies looking at it in pet rabbits. Other things that we actually use quite a lot, tramadol is one of those drugs that has come into popularity really in the last few years, and it's something we have used certainly in our bunny patients. I quite often use it because it's an oral medication. We've got the drops, the 100 mg per mil drops, easy to give. Owners can take it home. They can give it concurrently with meloxicam, and it does seem to work quite well. I have had a few cases where it seems to cause sedation, and this is something perhaps to warn owners about, and if that happens we might need to reduce dose or take the animal off it. We also have gabapentin that we've used for neuropathic pain in pet bunnies, and again it seems to work relatively well. We might get side effects, so we need to be aware of that too. I did move on there because I thought I probably had a dose rate for you for the tramadol. So there are studies in rats looking at 10 mg per kg and working well. In rabbits, there was one study that looked at oral 11 mg per kg doses, but they didn't reach therapeutic levels that would be effective in humans. So that was a concern in that study. We tend to go for a 5 mg per kg dose per os twice daily of the oral tramadol. What I try and do is stagger that with the meloxicam, so we're not giving both at the same time, because there's some thought that it may only give 8 hours of analgesia. So if we're mixing the two, so we give perhaps meloxicam 9 in the morning, tramadol at 11, meloxicam 9 at night, tramadol at 11 at night, if owners can do that, and that seems to work very, very well. All our work with gabapentin is anecdotal, unfortunately, in rabbits. There are no studies I'm aware of that drug. But that's something we need to look at. Something I've thought about more recently I'd quite like to try is amantadine, and this is something that seems to cause less sedation than tramadol in dogs. And it's something I think we should perhaps consider. This is the dog dose here, totally off license and again sort of anecdotal use, but I think it's something else we should be thinking about in our pet rabbits, and you know, perhaps being aware of the side effects and the fact that it can take up to a week to work properly and that we need to wean off gradually, don't suddenly stop. But I think that's something that perhaps for the future we should be considering using. So do feed back to me if you do use it. Let me know how you feel it works. Or if you've already used it, I guess, as well, would be another scenario. I just wanted to sort of reach a bit of a conclusion here. I guess we've sort of talked about all these conditions in these pet rabbits. I hope very much that you have got a good idea of what you're looking out for clinically in your practice situation, and I hope that it's encouraged you to let the rabbit out on the floor of your consult room and just watch it as you're chatting with the owner about the problem they brought it in for. And if you have got concerns and the owner's really not, you know, says it's that's normal for that rabbit, then maybe getting them to video at home, seeing if it's still doing it in its home environment where it feels secure. And also potentially saying, look, let's get some imaging done. You know, I'm happy to be proved wrong, but what if this animal is in pain? I do think we need to provide analgesia. How effective it is very difficult to assess, and we don't really have the pain scales and pain studies that we do in dogs and cats to base this on. Again, it's something for the future that I'd really like to do, is sort of look at questionnaires for rabbit owners to assess, you know, effectiveness of different analgesic drugs. I guess also, what are the effects of sort of long-term administration? Do we know? Is this a problem? Owners often ask this. And also, what alternative therapies do we have? Are there any other things we can use to alleviate pain? And this is where we were talking about our physio and our acupuncture and our other treatments that we might consider. So I do actually have some questions that I wanted to just bring up with you. I just actually mentioned in the previous slide that you know, we don't really know how long we can use these medications for, and actually a question that's come up during the talk is it safe to use meloxicam long term? I think this is a really common question from our owners as well, and the answer is we don't really know. Anecdotally, we certainly have had rabbits on meloxicam long term, and certainly over a year, sometimes trying to taper the dose down so that we're sort of minimal dose that's effective. Usually having repeat assessments of that individual, repeating biochemistry, perhaps also repeating urinary protein creatinine to see if we've got any side effects with renal issues, and closely monitoring obviously for any potential side effects of GI ulceration. My take with owners is really, you know, yes, it might potentially shorten your animal's life, but hopefully it will be a pain-free life, which is perhaps better than a painful life that's longer. And I think most owners are on board with that philosophy. Yes, you know, there are side effects, but we want this animal to be pain-free. And it certainly does seem to have a relatively good effect. I've also used tramadol, and this is where the multimodal sort of analgesia comes in. I've used tramadol concurrently, and in very severe cases, I would straight away go for the oral tramadol and meloxicam combined. And obviously warn owners of the potential for any sort of sedation effects of that. So that would be my, in severe case, that would be my sort of treatments of choice. If we've got renal disease, then I would go for tramadol on its own. Again, if things aren't under control with that, then we need to be chatting about whether we do introduce meloxicam, but carefully at a low dose, and we monitor that rabbit very carefully for signs of any problems. So that would be probably, you know, my take on whether we can use it long term or not. The other question that I had was, what if you have no access to CT? Hopefully, you know, more and more people are able to use CT, but sometimes costs can be high for this. I think if that's the case and you're in a practice situation where you don't have CT, then certainly offer radiographs if you're seeing clinical signs and have a clinical history that's suspicious. You may miss, you know, subtle signs with radiography, and that's quite easy to do. And I think warning owners of that, certainly you'll see obvious spondylosis and obvious osteoarthritis when it's quite advanced, but the mild cases you probably will miss. Having said that, if you do miss mild changes, then, you know, I still think there's a case to explain that to the owner. And if we're still concerned that the animal has gait abnormalities, even if they're mild, then maybe trial a short course of analgesia and see if that makes a difference. Because, you know, owners often do miss these subtle clinical signs. So I think that's been quite a whirlwind look at chronic skeletal pain in pet rabbits, and I do very much hope that you have now got some further insight into these cases, and I would very much encourage you to go away and start looking at how your rabbits are walking and their gait in your practice situation, and I think you will start seeing these animals that are crawling and that are pivoting, and yeah. Those are the cases that you need to concentrate on more and consider. Have you got osteoarthritis or spinal disease? Okay, thank you so much for your time.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Emma for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.